Court will proceed to the second case of the day, Hale v. Chu. Mr. Schroeder?
Good morning, Your Honors. Ryan Schroeder here on behalf of the plaintiff's appellants. There are several issues this case raises. The first one, I think probably the most important one, concerns the status of the parties, whether this should be treated as a direct action, even though it was initially styled as a derivative action. As our briefs point out, the case was initially filed by three individuals, both individually and as a derivative action on behalf of China Online. One of those individuals, actually two of them, were directors of China Online as of the date of its dissolution, which occurred about 2 years before the suit was filed. One of those individuals was not only a director, but the CEO of the company. And as the briefing in the district court played out, once the case was removed from state court under Delaware law, which we're not challenging, since the company was dissolved, there cannot be a derivative action. But what our contention is that this was a suit brought by the directors. The pleadings that Mr. Chu filed in the district court himself acknowledged that this was, for all practical purposes, a direct action by China Online. Form should not prevail over substance, and this action should be treated for what it was recognized as being by Mr. Chu himself, which is a direct action brought by China Online. For that, and the district court, therefore, should not have dismissed the case as a case that could not have been a derivative action. What the district court should have done is said, this is a direct action. You parties admitted yourselves. We're going to treat it as such. And the case should then have proceeded to its merits. Again, form should not prevail over substance, and this is an action that China Online did have the ability to maintain in its own name because under Delaware law, a dissolved corporation still retains the right for 3 years after dissolution to file a lawsuit in its own name for wrongs done to the company. The next issue this case presents concerns the service on Mr. Chu himself, and one of the arguments he makes is that service was improper under the Hague Convention because he was served personally in China. And the Hague Convention does not allow for personal service other than through the Chinese Central Authority. However, as we point out, the summons that was initially issued against Mr. Chu did not list his address. And Article 1 of the Hague Convention indicates that it does not apply when you do not know the address of the person whom you're seeking to serve. And that triggers Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 4FC, sub I, which says that unless prohibited by the domestic country's law, you can affect service outside the United States by personal service. Chinese law does not prohibit personal service, and therefore the personal service that Mr. Chu recognizes was had on him is valid, and therefore we do have personal service on him. The next issue that is raised concerns the fiduciary shield doctrine and whether Mr. Chu's presence in Illinois on a limited number of occasions to transact business with China Online is or is not protected by the fiduciary shield doctrine. We first of all submit that this court need not consider that issue and instead should remand to the district court because the district court had dismissed the case solely on the basis of it could not have been maintained as a derivative action. And therefore, the district court denied as moot Mr. Chu's motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction. So the district court did not consider the personal jurisdiction issue, namely the Hague Convention and what I'm about to discuss, the fiduciary shield doctrine. For that reason alone, under the Pleasureland case, we think you should remand so the district court can make its assessments in the first instance and decide what should be done on those issues. If you choose to look at these issues yourselves nonetheless, I've already addressed why the Hague Convention does not apply. The fiduciary shield doctrine does not apply and therefore does not take Mr. Chu outside the scope of jurisdiction because he admits in his declaration that he was here in Illinois on behalf of a company called FE Digital to do business with China Online. As his declaration further admits, He is a director of FE Digital, and he also owns FE Digital because he owns the two companies that wholly own the stock of FE Digital. So what we have here is Mr. Chu being a director of the company, which places him in senior management of FE Digital. Not only is he a director, he is an owner. And his declaration does not describe the specific extent of his ownership interest, but because this is a matter reviewed on pleadings and there was no evidentiary hearing on this personal jurisdiction issue, the plaintiffs are entitled to inferences, all inferences that reasonably can be drawn in their favor, to be drawn in their favor in addressing the jurisdiction issue. And therefore, what we're saying is it has to be assumed that Mr. Chu is the sole owner and a whole owner. So we have Mr. Chu now being a director and the owner. And as the Bruges case we cited from the district court here, a prior decision, but from the Northern District of Illinois, as it states, being an owner and a sole shareholder is a significant factor in determining whether the fiduciary shield doctrine applies, because if you're a senior management person, as Mr. Chu is, he makes a decision about whether his company is going to do business in Illinois. He made that decision. He chose to come here. He's benefiting personally from it as a director and as an owner of the companies. And therefore, the fiduciary shield doctrine would not apply, and therefore the district court should not have, it didn't reach the issue, but the fiduciary shield doctrine cannot be invoked by Mr. Chu to say that the district court lacked personal jurisdiction over him. And for those reasons, we think the case should be remanded, and that this case should be allowed to proceed as a direct action, and that the jurisdiction issues should be deferred for the district court to rule on, or alternatively, again, if you reach them, you should rule in the plaintiff's favor on those issues so that there is jurisdiction and this direct action should be allowed to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Schroeder.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Simon?
May it please the Court. Plaintiffs do not contest several points in this case. And indeed, counsel reiterated their lack of dispute on several points. One, their complaint does not state a derivative claim. Two, they fraudulently joined China Online as a defendant. Three, the district court properly denied their motion to remand. Four, the district court properly dismissed their derivative claims. And five, the district court properly dismissed their individual shareholder claims. Now, on appeal, instead, for the first time, they assert that China Online is bringing a direct action rather than a derivative action. They never raised this argument in the district court. They apparently chose not to raise this argument in the district court because the derivative action was key to their motion to remand. And if they had admitted to the district court that they were pursuing a direct action on behalf of China Online, that would have further undermined their derivative claims. They didn't raise it then, and as a result, based on the economy folding box case and other cases we've cited, they've waived that argument. They assert that there are exceptions to the waiver rule under the economy folding box case, and they're right, but the exceptions don't apply. The exceptions for jurisdictional questions don't apply here. This is not a jurisdictional argument they're raising. And there's nothing exceptional about this case that justice demands more flexibility. Even if they get past the no new arguments on appeal rule, they have another problem, and that is the complaint, even as a direct action, would fail to state a claim. Iqbal holds that legal conclusions in a complaint must be supported by factual allegations. The claims asserted in the complaint all turn on Mr. Xu having a fiduciary duty to China Online and its shareholders, but the complaint has absolutely no allegations about what the basis of that fiduciary duty is. It doesn't allege that he's a director of China Online. It doesn't allege that he's an officer of China Online. It doesn't say anything at all about the source or basis of any fiduciary duty. The complaint thus fails to allege facts that support those legal conclusions and fails to state a claim. Although the district court did not address that argument, it provides basis for you to affirm the dismissal anyway, because Mr. Chu made this argument as part of his motion to dismiss, and an appellate court may affirm a judgment on any grounds supported by the record. Even
if we were to do that, though, shouldn't we send it back to let the district court decide whether the opportunity to replead should be allowed?
No, and I was going to address that next. In terms of one of their arguments that they asserted in their reply brief for the first time on appeal, not even in their initial brief, is that they should have been granted leave to amend. And this argument has several problems. First, they never sought leave to amend in the district court. This is something they came up with in their reply brief on this appeal. Second, the cases that they cite...
Well, if the district judge had reached that issue, then they could have sought leave to replead.
I'm sorry.
If the district judge had reached the issue,
right,
then the plaintiffs could have sought leave to replead.
Mr. Chu filed his motion in October of 2008. The district court didn't decide that motion until August of 2009, 10 months later. They had 10 months during that period to seek leave to amend their complaint, to, as they also argue in their reply, to substitute China Online in as a party, as a plaintiff, although they also contend in their initial brief that China Online already has direct claims. So they had more than ample opportunity to move for leave to amend or to do anything of that nature. They didn't do any of those things. And the cases they cite, though, in support of their argument on leave to amend, don't support them. The Berry Aviation case, that was a case in which leave to amend had been sought and denied. Plaintiffs, as I said, never sought leave to amend. The Green case also doesn't apply. In that case, Green, the plaintiff, had prevailed in the district court on an argument, bad faith, I think, by the defendant, that he had not included in his complaint. But allowing an amendment to conform the pleadings to the proof doesn't support allowing plaintiffs who never move for leave to amend to file an amended complaint based on a theory that they never asserted in the district court. And as I said, their argument that they made on reply about under Rule 17 has similar problems. The Raouf case they cite doesn't help them. Unlike the plaintiff in that case, again, they never made any motion in the district court to substitute China Line as the plaintiff. And as I said, in their initial appellate brief, they argued that China Line has asserted direct claims in the complaint. So that in and of itself makes that argument specious. Let's move to jurisdiction. Personal jurisdiction also provides an alternative basis for affirming the dismissal.
Shouldn't the district judge have gotten to that first to determine whether the court had personal jurisdiction over the parties before reaching the merits of your motion to dismiss?
Well,
I know
perhaps.
You argue you win anyway,
yes.
but
perhaps. I think the district court probably looked at it as something it could resolve on the pleadings. More simply, without going to the affidavit filed by Mr. Chu, which was not opposed and therefore to be taken as true. But I think the district court thought it was taking a more direct path, especially because it had to dismiss the derivative claims in order to deal with the motion to remand. So having done that, it was 99% of the way there. By dismissing the derivative claims, then it merely needed to dismiss the individual shareholder claims, and the case was over. I think that's why the district court did not advance to personal jurisdiction.
But there's no requirement that the court reach personal jurisdiction first before it would address the merits.
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I'm not sure. It was not an issue that was raised by opposing counsel, so I'm not sure. I haven't researched it. If you'd like, I could provide a memorandum, but I think in any case the result will be the same because for at least two reasons, personal jurisdiction or the lack of personal jurisdiction provides an alternative basis to affirm the dismissal. First, Chinese law only it prohibits service of process other than through the Chinese Central Authority. The Hague Convention says that a country, the destination state as it refers to, the country where service will occur, it gets to decide how process will be served. Plaintiffs admit they didn't serve Mr. Chu through the Central Authority. Rule 4F2C that they cite doesn't help them because that rule says that it applies if the foreign country it doesn't apply if the foreign country does not permit that method of service. Chinese law does not permit personal service other than through the Central Authority, so that rule doesn't apply. They also argued in the district court that the Hague Convention should be disregarded because Mr. Chu voluntarily accepted service. There's no evidence of that. There's no evidence that he voluntarily accepted the envelope that one of the plaintiff's husbands, David Hale, handed him, or that he even knew what the contents of it was. On appeal for the first time, they argued that they didn't have to comply with the Hague Convention because they didn't know Mr. Chu's address. Well, number one, they waived that issue because they never asserted it in the district court. The exceptions to the economy folding box case don't apply. And next, if simply not putting an address on the summons was good enough to avoid the requirements of the Hague Convention, then anybody could avoid the requirements of the Hague Convention by leaving the name, by leaving the defendant's address off the summons. So simply not putting Mr. Chu's address on the summons doesn't establish they didn't have his address, doesn't allow them to avoid the requirements of the Hague Convention. But even beyond that, lack of minimum contacts with Illinois also provides a basis to affirm the dismissal. Plaintiffs don't contend that there's no basis to assert to exercise general jurisdiction over Mr. Chu. There's also no basis to exercise specific jurisdiction over him because the complaint doesn't allege anything about the claims having any connection to any contacts that Chu has had with Illinois. And there's no evidence that the claims have any connection to or even directly arise out of his very limited contacts as the rules require. If the claims are somehow viewed as directly arising out of Mr. Chu's limited contacts, then the fiduciary shield doctrine would further protect him. In a 2009 district court case, the Dual Temp of Illinois case, district court held that the fiduciary shield doctrine barred the exercise of jurisdiction over a CEO of a company because, quote, there was no indication that he, the CEO, was acting for personal gain distinct from the company's interests. That case also distinguished the Bruges case on which plaintiff's counsel rely. And the 2007 Illinois appellate court case, the Petrich case, held that the fiduciary shield doctrine barred the exercise of jurisdiction over the band members of a band called NSYNC based on the actions they took as shareholders as well as employees. So there you have two people who were owners, and they said the fiduciary shield doctrine still applied. As far as the comment that was made during our argument, which is not in their briefs, I might add, that Mr. Chu supposedly is the sole owner of FE Digital, his affidavit says that he holds a beneficial interest in two entities that own it. By saying a beneficial interest, it's certainly clear that he is not by any means the sole owner. Mr. Chu's uncontroverted declaration establishes that all of his dealings in Illinois, and they were very few, were on behalf of FE Digital, a British Virgin Islands corporation with an office in Hong Kong. There's no indication that he was acting for personal gain distinct from FE Digital's interests, so the fiduciary shield doctrine applies in this case. There's no basis for the plaintiff's argument that Mr. Chu is the alter ego of FE Digital, something they assert in their briefs. So for all those reasons, the fiduciary shield doctrine applies as well. Finally, as far as remanding, this case should not be remanded for further proceedings relating to personal jurisdiction because the record contains all the evidence you need to determine that Mr. Chu lacks sufficient contacts. Mr. Chu's affidavit is to be taken as true under the GCIU case that we cited because plaintiffs never responded in any way to Mr. Chu's declaration. The Pleasureland case that they cite doesn't apply because in that case, the court said we must remand for factual development of the record. It goes on to say the record does not contain any information regarding a particular issue, and that information is necessary to properly decide the claim. Here, you've got all the information, so there's no need to remand. The court should affirm the district court's dismissal of the complaint.
Thank you, Mr. Simon.
Thank you.
Mr. Schroeder?
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Simon raised several issues about what we didn't do below and should have done below. I submit that that is really not material. What the issue is what was done below and what is this record as it stands before you enough to affirm rather than reverse the district court. And as we have argued, it is not enough, and the district court decision should be reversed. About the direct action versus derivative, this was not some bolt of lightning out of the blue about treating this as a direct versus a derivative cause of action. Mr. Chu himself recognized that it was a direct action. Justice here does demand flexibility because of that. This isn't some totally crazy argument that came out of nowhere. This was what he himself said this case is all about. I don't see why justice doesn't demand flexibility when he himself has admitted this is a direct cause of action. This court in Green said that we resolve cases on the merits, not technicalities. This is the quintessential technical argument, a derivative versus a direct cause of action. Mr. Simon said our complaint is badly written and doesn't meet the Supreme Court's requirements under ICBA. Well, this court in Berry said that leave to amend should be freely given to do justice, and especially when the initial complaint is the complaint that's at issue. That's what we have here. Our initial complaint, even if it is deficient, under Berry, the district court should have said, amend it. And then we'll see if you have a cause of action. About personal jurisdiction, taking Mr. Chu's affidavit as true, his affidavit is valid only as far as it goes. And his affidavit says, I am a director of FE Digital. I came to Illinois as a director of FE Digital to do business with China Online. I have an interest in the two companies that own FE Digital. That doesn't preclude him being the sole owner or a majority owner. There could only be one other owner. He could be the only director. We don't know. That's my point. That's why the district court should consider these issues on remand. Mr. Chu should have filed a better declaration instead of saying it's our fault for not challenging his declaration. We didn't need to. He came here to Illinois. He chose to come here as a director to do business with China Online. I think that's enough for jurisdiction. He came here, and his interests are the same as FE Digital's are. And if they're not, then let's explore that on remand before the district court. And again, the district court didn't consider the jurisdictional issues, and I don't think you can say as a matter of law that Mr. Chu's declaration is enough to say under no set of circumstances could he have had, could the fiduciary shield doctrine not apply. And that's really what they're asking you to do, and I don't think that this record allows you to do that. The dual temp case, as we said in our reply brief, is distinguishable because in that case the individual was only a CEO. There was no evidence that the individual was a director or owner of the company at issue. Here we have both. Mr. Chu is a director and an owner, perhaps the owner, of FE Digital. That means that Bruges applies, and Mr. Chu's decisions allow him to be personally benefited by what FE Digital did here in Illinois. For all these reasons, this case should be remanded. The case should be treated for what it is, for what the parties themselves acted as it was, what Mr. Chu acted as it was, and the jurisdictional issues, at the very least, are not something that can be resolved on this record and therefore should be remanded and should have been considered by the district court in the first instance. But in any event, it is not something that we submit that you can decide now as a matter of law based on what we consider to be the incomplete written submissions on the issue. So for all those reasons, we ask that you reverse the district court's decision and remand the matter so it can proceed on its merits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schroeder and Mr. Simon. The case is taken under advisement.